Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else. The afterworld. A world of never-ending happiness. You can always see the sun. Day or night. So when you call up that shrink in Beverly Hills, you know the one. Doctor, everything will be alright. Instead of asking them how much of your time is left, ask them how much of your mind, baby. Cause in this life, things are much harder than in the afterworld. This life, you're on your own. And if the elevator tries to break you down,
hi there, folks. This is Nick Salomon of the Bevis Rond, just having slurped down some cherry juice. How do they make that? Take out the pips, I suppose, and squash it. Anyhow, you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC Acre, and legally we're clear. Hooray. Have fun.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. And today the forecast is for warming temperatures and mostly rain, but the precipitation is expected to turn back into snow Thursday night and Friday morning. Today we'll hear from retired meteorologist Hugh Johnson telling us all about snow and snowflakes and this storm. Plus we'll hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. All this and more starts after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
This is the network, network. On air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. This is the network, network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network, network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network.
This is the news.
This is the network.
This is the news.
This is the network.
On January 28, 2022, Wave Farm Incorporated, licensee of WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, New York, filed an application with the Federal Communications Commission for the renewal of its license. Members of the public wishing to view this application or obtain information about how to file comments and petitions on the application can visit publicfiles.fcc.gov. and search in WGXC's public file.
Do you have 17 cents a day to support a platform for many diverse voices to have their say on the local airwaves? Just 17 cents a day, a monthly $5 recurring donation, can help keep local youth on the air at WGXC 90.7 FM. Your monthly sustaining support will keep the airwaves full of music from around the world and around the corner. WGXC needs 500 sustaining supporters to make sure there is one spot on the dial where the community can have access to its own airwaves. Make your pledge today at wgxc.org/donate and do your part to protect an important source of local news, information, and entertainment. With just 17 cents a day, you will do your part to protect your favorite frequency. Become a sustaining supporter today. Go to wgxc.org/donate now.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Ruby's Hotel and Restaurant in Freehold, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. On January 2nd, Columbia County Department of Health officials reported two more deaths from COVID-19 and another two more on February 1st. Even though case counts are falling throughout the area, there is still a dangerous disease in our midst. Across the Hudson River, Greene County officials announced another COVID-19 death there over the weekend. It was the 108th death from coronavirus in Greene County. And Ulster County officials announced February 2nd the death of two more people from COVID-19. On February 1st, Dutchess County reported another COVID-19-related death. And Albany County officials reported three more deaths there on February 2nd.
Joshua Solomon reports in the Times Union how the proposal for redistricting before the state legislature will redraw the lines of local state senators and assembly members. Republican State Senator Daphne Jordan is drawn out of her district as her home in Half Moon is no longer in the 43rd Senate District under the proposal. Instead, the district is drawn from the north border of Rensselaer County to Poughkeepsie, although it does not include a few of the westernmost towns in Rensselaer, Columbia, and Dutchess counties. If Jordan does not decide to move into the new district that would have voted for President Joe Biden with 52% of its votes, the seat would be wide open. Katie Delgado, spokesperson for the Senate Minority Conference, said in a statement, and I quote, "Regardless of what the district lines look like in November, Senator Jordan will continue to represent the best interest of all New Yorkers as she has since taking office in 2019, end quote. The 45th Senate District is now radically different. Currently, it extends from north of Albany to the Canadian border, is represented by Republican Daniel Stack. Under the new proposal, it includes Coeymans, Bethlehem, New Scotland, Cohoes, and the city of Albany and Scodac, East Greenbush, and North Greenbush in Rensselaer County, and would seem an easy win for a Democrat. In the 48th State Senate District, Democrat Michelle Henchy loses conservative Schoharie County, but now has Rensselaerville, Westerlo, Bern, Knox, and Gilderland in Albany County, and the western half of Columbia County, as well as all of Greene and Ulster counties, to represent. In the Assembly, Republican Jake Ashby's 107th district gets a little bluer, adding in Del Mar would be folded into a far-reaching 107th district, which would include parts of Washington County, Hoosick Falls, Kinderhook, and Chatham. It would represent most of rural Rensselaer County. The district is currently represented by Assemblyman Jake Ashby, Republican of Castleton. The district would become modestly more Democratic, happening in Bethlehem in Albany County, and switching from eastern Columbia County towns to Chatham, Stuyvesant, Kinderhook, Ghent, and Stockport. Democrat D.D. Barrett's 106th district is largely the same, but adds Hillsdale, Austerlitz, Canaan, New Lebanon, and Chatham in Columbia County. Republican Chris Teague's 102nd district leaves Columbia County and adds Bern and Knox in Albany County while switching from Saugerties to Shandaken in Ulster County. Independent observers continue to complain about the partisan nature of the new maps. Laura Ladd Bierman, executive director of the League, said in a statement on February 1st, and I quote, "Partisan gerrymandering is banned under the state constitutional amendment passed in 2014, yet the maps release reflect a legislature that appears to care more about favoring partisan interests than it does for fair maps," end quote. While Democrats drew the lines in their favor this time, the Republican-led Senate drew these maps 10 years ago after the partisan split legislature could not agree. The congressional lines were drawn by a judge. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
Nick Reisman is reporting for New York State of Politics that New York State Assembly Republicans released a letter to Governor Kathy Hochul February 2nd, urging the governor to end the statewide indoor mask mandate and to grant more authority over the pandemic to local governments. Quote, "We urge you to reverse course and return authority to our local governments as the New York State public health law was designed to do," unquote, the letter states. However, Hochul said New York will continue to keep its mask rule in place for now after a spike in cases caused by the Omicron variant of COVID-19. The letter was delivered as the mask mandate is being challenged in state court. A Nassau County judge overturned the mandate, but the order was stayed while the appeal continues. Republicans have been critical of the indoor mask rules, especially for schools in New York. Republican candidate for governor, Representative Lee Zeldin, this week appeared at a rally in Albany calling for the mask rule to be dropped in schools. Quote, "If she truly respected the role of the legislature, she wouldn't try to preserve this unlawful mandate," unquote, tweeted GOP State Assemblymember Chris Tagg. Hochul believes a mask rule must remain in place for now in order to prevent further spread of COVID-19, and recently extended the mandate until February 10th. Hochul has argued that masks need to remain on indoors in order to keep businesses and schools open and prevent hospitals from being overwhelmed with COVID-19 patients. Hochul's office on February 2nd reported 7,131 patients with COVID are hospitalized in New York. Of those, 46.1% are in the hospital for reasons other than COVID or COVID-related complications. Quote, "We're in a much better place, but we have to decide what that looks like," unquote, she said when asked about the mask mandate. Quote, "We're not prepared to throw in the towel and say we're done fighting COVID," unquote. Read more about this story at NewYorkStateOfPolitics.com.
Ted Remsnyder reports for Columbia Green Media that as a town board member in August, Jason Watts voted for a $70,000 land purchase by the town of Cairo. But now, as supervisor, Watts wants to renege on the deal. Watts says the $70,000 land purchase is not included in the town's 2022 budget. Watts says former town supervisor John Coyne fooled him into believing the purchase was necessary for water infrastructure. Watts said January 31st, and I quote, "I voted for it because we were taking the supervisor's advice on why we needed it. Now that I know all the facts and I know everything that's going on, it's not needed. We were told by John Coyne that it was vital infrastructure for water and sewer. Then when I started meeting with different people about water and sewer, I started asking them what the piece of property was needed for. They told me nothing. So then I asked the town attorney if we could get out of it, and he told me, 'Jason, you're already in contract. They put $1,000 down,' end quote. Cairo Town Board member Tim Powers, who, like Watts, voted for the purchase, says Watts knew all about the purchase. Powers said, and I quote, "He sat through all six budget meetings, so he knows what was in the budget and what wasn't. Originally, when the purchase of the Miller property was discussed, we planned on doing it on a bond. He's just using it as cannon fodder to say we can't pay for it. We planned on getting a bond for it because we figured the bond would be slow enough that it could be paid off in a couple of years," end quote. In the town's minutes for the August 30th board meeting, the Barton and Logadice engineering consulting firm in Albany said, and I quote, that this was a goodbye for future opportunities, end quote. Coyne did not return calls for comments. Watts says, and I quote, "I was misled. John was the liaison for the water and sewer department, and John was our supervisor. So why wouldn't I believe him as a board member? He was talking to the county and Delaware Engineering. I just called my bookkeeper to make sure everything I'm saying about this was true, and she said yes. They didn't put it on the budget. We voted yes, and they still didn't put it into the budget." Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
The Daily Freeman is reporting that Scenic Hudson has announced its acquisition of 6 acres of waterfront land in the village of Athens. The property could provide the potential for new river-based recreation, the agency said in a press release. In addition to 1,000 feet of river frontage, the site includes an 8,000-square-foot warehouse that could be repurposed, according to Scenic Hudson. Seth McKee, executive director of the Scenic Hudson Land Trust Incorporated and Land Program, said in a statement, quote, Scenic Hudson looks forward to collaborating with the Village of Athens, New York State, and local partners as we explore ways to restore the land's natural beauty and maximize the recreational and economic benefits it can provide, unquote. Land was an industrial site for decades, including operations to distribute fuel, oils, and road salt. Most recently, it was proposed as a location for a construction and demolition debris transfer facility. Athens Mayor Amy Sirago said in a statement, quote, the potential of turning this industrial site into a place for residents and visitors to connect with the Hudson River and the maritime history of our village is truly exciting, and I'm grateful to Scenic Hudson for making this feasible by acquiring the land, unquote. Land is located adjacent to the Athens State Boat Launch on Murderers Creek, a tributary of the Hudson River. The launch has been targeted for improvement as part of the state's Hudson Eagles Recreation Area. The site also plays a role in sustaining wildlife and offering climate solutions, the release said. The price paid for the land was not immediately available. Read more about the story in the Daily Freeman.
Roger Hannigan-Gilson reports in the Times Union that the developer that owns the most properties in Hudson is now planning a 30-room high-end hotel in Hudson. Galvin unveiled initial plans to Hudson's planning board in January to turn two vacant apartment buildings into a 20,000-square-foot, three-story hotel on Warren Street. Galvin wants property tax breaks from the city and tax credits for historical preservation. Common Council member Mohammed Rani said he has seen the cost of housing skyrocket since he immigrated to Hudson in 1996 as a child, and that Galvin has played a role in those price increases by, and I quote, hoarding, end quote, properties. Ronnie said, and I quote, if you look at them at face value, sometimes it looks like they're doing good things, but at the same time, they're really taking advantage of these tax programs, and then they're trying to benefit off the tourism industry, end quote. Common Council member Margaret Morris wonders why the proposal does not include any parking. Last year, Galvin received a $6.6 million discount on property taxes through the city's Industrial Development Agency. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
Natasha Von Holdridge is reporting for Columbia Green Media that the Columbia County Department of Health announced January 28th, during the course of a three-month investigation, four tobacco retailers in the county had been found to be selling tobacco products to underage people in violation of the state's law. Four locations exposed during the investigation include Sharon's Market in Chatham, Love's Travel Stop in Canaan, Extra Mart in Livingston, and the Elizaville Diner and Deli in Elizaville. Two of the violations occurred in September, the other two in November. Quote, we were a little surprised and we were getting people, unquote, Department of Health Director Jack Mabb said. Quote, I think a lot of it had to do with the places got a little lax in that we weren't going out at one point because of COVID and then we started again. So it's a little surprising, but it does happen, unquote. Under state law, cigarettes, cigars, and other tobacco products cannot be sold to anyone under the age of 21. New York raised the legal age to purchase tobacco products from 18 to 21 years old in 2019. Public health departments are required to check compliance by tobacco retailers. Adolescents are enlisted to act as customers asking to buy cigarettes and then are trained by the Department of Health, Mabb said. The fine is for the first offense of selling to a minor is $350, a second offense is $500, and the fine for a third violation is $1,000. If a business makes two sales to underage people within 3 years, they lose their license to sell lottery tickets for 6 months, Mabb said. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website. WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day. And now, here is your WGXC weather update. Your forecast for the next 2 days.
Well, on Thursday, rain with a temperature high near 40 degrees. More rain on Thursday night and sleet before 10 p.m., then sleet possibly mixed with freezing rain and a temperature low of around 21 degrees. And on Friday, freezing rain before 4 a.m., then a chance of sleet with a temperature high near 26 degrees. And Friday night, a chance of sleet before 7 p.m., mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 8 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC, 90.7 FM, radio for open ears, in Greene and Columbia counties.
On Thursday, February 3rd, you can tune in all sorts of creative community voices on the radio at 90.7 FM, including retired meteorologist Hugh Johnson explaining how snow forms and if snow is coming our way this weekend. That's Thursday at 9 a.m. on the WGXC Morning Show. At 11 a.m., tune in Chiquella Flamenco Explorations on the Transformational Listening Show. Then Alan Skerritt takes over at noon after the local news with R&B, fusion, blues, rock, and more on the Crossroads in Rhythm program live from Columbia County. 2 p.m., we head into the Briar Patch with What's the Frequency, Kenneth, from Paul Fisher. At 3 p.m., it's time to turn on the news and find out how the former president admitted to attempting to overturn the election. Then the French radio network TT Node are the guest curators on the Radia Show at 3:30 p.m. with radio art for your ears. And then don't forget to tune in the Singularity program from the Catskill Maker Syndicate at 7 p.m. and Donna and Honey's Love Motel from Anya Kanovskaya and Amanda Lees at 8 p.m. on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM.
To get a local event mentioned on All Together Now, go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page and copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
Live music is back locally and on the radio at WGXC, and there's performances this Saturday, February 5th at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill. Tune in or turn out to live performances from Witch Kiss, Manu, and Sleeping Dreaming, beamed in from the Avalon Lounge in Catskill and broadcast on the radio at WGXC Saturday, February 5th from 8 to 11 p.m. Go to theavalonlounge.com for more information about this show or WGXC.org for more information about what you might be hearing on the radio.
He's hit with a 40-foot wall of sulfuric acid that will horribly burn everything in its path. Now, that's real acid, so I want to see goggles, people.
My eyes, the goggles do nothing.
It's almost always safety first at the Thingularity radio program, so don't let that happen to you. Have your questions answered by sending them to catskillmakersinfo@gmail.com and tune in every first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. on WGXC 90.7 FM Acra or anytime at WGXC.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Thursday, February 3rd. We see 35 degrees early this morning in Kingston and 39 degrees in Stockport. And beyond that, I'm not really sure what to tell you about the next 48 hours. Even the bigwigs are shrugging their shoulders on this one. Today will be pretty much 42 degrees and rainy all day long. We're pretty confident about that. After dark, temperatures start to fall. Once midnight hits, the dice roll. Temperatures fall below freezing around midnight. After 1 a.m., the warm falling rain will be hitting sub-freezing surfaces, causing an ice buildup. Don't be driving. Around 7 a.m., we hit our temperature low of 23 degrees. Then precipitation changes to sleet, which will then transition to snow, let's say around noon. Why not? And around 2 to 3 inches is expected to fall in our listening area. The thermometer should hold steady at 24 degrees all day. After dark, snow tapers off, then it gets cold. 9 degrees overnight takes us into a dry Saturday with a high of 25 degrees. Another cold night, 0 degrees, then a dry Sunday with a high of 30. Sunset today will be at 4:57 p.m. and sunrise tomorrow will be at 7:02 a.m. Looking way up, we have a 25% chance of M-class solar flares today. Radio and GPS disruption could occur. Solar wind speed is currently 504 kilometers per second at 9.6 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently bad. The radio interference has just been terrible this week. Overnight, things return mostly to fair conditions. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 4, unsettled. The current sunspot number is 75. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of John Mason of Chatham, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
اشل هدفو ادغلوني مرهانيت هضب هدرو ادغلوني ترنيت شل هدفو ادغلوني ليش ميشي الجن تدكاني عشرة نت على غفية بس تلاجتن شنجاني تمظلج ترى هنيت اوين داغ مش اشوار تمظلج ترى هنيت اقيم الهين ما غيدر هنيت والهين ما غي ما غي ما غي ترى هنيت
Thank you.
That was the band Imaran from their 2022 album Abugi. That was the track Achinkad on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM.
Hello, this is Rob Gellis with This Month in History, a chronicle of significant or infamous events in art, science, music, literature, sports, and more that occurred this month, either in the near or distant past. On February 1st, 2003, 16 minutes before it was scheduled to land, the space shuttle Columbia broke apart in flight over West Texas, killing all seven crew members. This was the second space shuttle lost in flight. In January 1986, Challenger exploded during liftoff. On February 3, 1870, the 15th Amendment to the United States Constitution was ratified, guaranteeing the right of citizens to vote regardless of race, color, or previous condition of servitude. On February 7, 1812, British novelist Charles Dickens was born in Portsmouth, England. Dickens wrote Oliver Twist and A Christmas Carol. On February 10, 1967, the 25th Amendment to the United States Constitution was ratified, clarifying the procedures for presidential succession in the event of the disability of a sitting president. On February 13, 1635, Boston Latin School, the first taxpayer-supported public school in America, was established in Boston, Massachusetts. On February 15, 1820, Susan B. Anthony was born in Adams, Massachusetts. A pioneer in women's rights, she worked tirelessly for women's suffrage, the right to vote. On February 19, 1942, internment of Japanese Americans began after President Franklin Roosevelt issued an executive order requiring those living on the Pacific coast to report for relocation. On February 21, 1972, President Richard Nixon arrived in China for historic meetings with Chairman Mao Zedong and Premier Zhou Enlai. On February 23, 1942, during World War II, the first attack on the U.S. mainland occurred as a Japanese submarine shelled an oil refinery near Santa Barbara, California, causing minor damage. On February 26, 1848, the Communist Manifesto pamphlet was published by two young socialists, Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels. On February 28, 1994, NATO conducted its first combat action in its 45-year history as four Bosnian Serb jets were shot down by American fighters in a no-fly zone. You've been listening to This Month in History, a monthly broadcast of historic events on WGXC 90.7 FM. If you have an event that you'd like to hear included in This Month in History, email me, Rob Gellis, at info@wgxc.org.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
The United States stands shoulder to shoulder with our NATO allies. The current situation demands that we reinforce the deterrent and defensive posture on NATO's eastern flank.
The U.S. government is deploying more troops to Europe as tensions between NATO allies and Russia continue to rise. President Joe Biden will be shifting about 1,000 Germany-based troops to Romania and deploying an additional 2,000 soldiers to both Poland and Romania. Last week, the Pentagon put an additional 8,500 troops on heightened alert. Pentagon spokesperson John Kirby says the U.S. is not providing troops to fight a Russian incursion into Ukraine, but is supplying Ukraine with weapons and supplies to defend itself.
I want to be very clear about something. These are not permanent moves. They are moves designed to respond to the current security environment.
The White House is ordering the National Archives to turn over former Vice President Mike Pence's records to the committee investigating the January 6th insurrection. The Hill reports former President Donald Trump objected to the move. The order comes after Jeffrey Clark, an official in Trump's Justice Department, met with the committee Wednesday. Clark reportedly used his position in the department to recommend sending notices to states urging them to delay certifying results from the 2020 election. The House of Representatives Transportation Subcommittee held a hearing on self-driving vehicles Tuesday. A coalition of industry officials, union leaders, and safety advocates are pushing Congress to adopt formal guidelines for the industry. Last year, Congress rejected such measures. John Samuelson with the Transport Workers Union says a federal framework for autonomous vehicles is necessary to protect the well-being and jobs of the nation's transportation workers.
We would strongly endorse legislation that regulates AV technology, holds new technologies to our existing safety standards, and ensures that this industry creates and sustains good union jobs in America.
The Senate Antitrust Subcommittee considered testimony on the tech industry's impact on local news organizations. Jennifer Bertetto with Trib Total Media, which operates the Pittsburgh Tribune Review and several smaller community newspapers in Pennsylvania, says Google and Facebook's hold on the news industry has contributed to news deserts in small communities.
Access to news online has become concentrated on two platforms, Facebook and Google, which serve as gatekeepers and determine how news is displayed, prioritized, monetized, without compensating the journalists that create the content they rely on.
President Biden has released a plan to cut the number of U.S. cancer deaths in half over the next 25 years, continuing a project begun when he was vice president. The New York Times reports the strategy authorized by Congress in 2016 was allocated $1.8 billion over a seven-year period. Roughly $400 million has yet to be spent. I'm Jonah Chester for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to The Morning Show on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Next, we hear from sound artist Pamela Z with a song, In the Other World, from her 2021 album, Echolocation.
In the other world. 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 In the other world.
In the other world. I married someone. In the other world. I married someone. I entered into a partnership, but I was someone else. In the other world, I'm always someone else.
In the other world. The other world. In the other world. The other world. In the other world. The other world. In the other world. The other world.
In the other world. I strayed away. In the other world, I took a plane. I became fluent in many tongues, but I was someone else. In the other world, I'm always someone else.
In the other world,
in the other world,
in the other world,
in the other world,
in the other world.
In the other world,
in the other world,
the other world. In the other world, I suffered a lot.
The other world.
In the other world, I suffered much.
The other world.
The sting of tremendous, beautiful grief.
The other world.
But I was someone else.
The other world.
In the other world, I'm always someone else.
In the other world.
The other world.
In the other world.
in the other world. Oh,
the other world.
In the other world.
Oh,
the other world. In the other world.
Oh,
the other world. In the other world. In the other world.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
We're joined once again by meteorologist Hugh Johnson for updates and insights on the weather. Hi, Hugh.
Hi, Kathy.
How are you?
I'm good. Good. I got out and enjoyed a beautiful day. It was nice and sunny.
A little crisp, was it not?
It worked
up
in the afternoon.
It's been mid-30s.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, well, it's a little colder where I am. So that was quite a blizzard that just bypassed us. Can you tell us how close we were to getting slammed? And what else do we need to know about it, since, after all, it missed us?
Yeah, well, it didn't totally miss us, but, yeah, we definitely missed the front of it. We were about 50 miles from the edge of the heavy snow line. When you start working into Massachusetts, snowfall amounts ramped up pretty fast. I think the Berkshires and places had a half a foot, and then you got into central Mass, and you were talking a foot or better. And then you get near the Worcester Hills in Boston, you're talking 2 feet or more. So, yeah, it was a very close call. Miles did pretty good for the most part, and it looked like the Gulf Stream might have been just a smidgen further to the east, and maybe that's where the storm rode along. So we kind of, you know, it kept the heavy snow away from us just barely. So it was a really close call. So, but we still got a couple inches, enough to make it look pretty and all that. I want to point one thing out real quickly before we go on. A coworker of mine reminded me that we talked about snowflakes not looking alike, and there was a guy named Wilson Bentley, otherwise known as Snowflake Bentley, who was a photographer back in the early 1900s, and he photographed almost 5,000 pictures of snowflakes against that black velvet, and he kind of proved that there were no snowflakes that looked alike. Now, there's a lot more than 5,000 snowflakes out there, but based on his algorithm and studies, it really shows that every single snowflake is indeed unique.
Sounds beautiful.
Yeah.
I really appreciate you bringing that back, because that has been sticking in my curiosity bucket. He photographed 5,000, and then he studied. What was his methodology? I still am not convinced. You know, even if you take 5,000 and you subject them to certain analytical criteria, and you're able to determine that on, I don't know, like looking at DNA on, or looking at fingerprints or something on a certain number of points, there is no match. Is there anything more to his methodology than beautiful photographs?
Yeah, I think he really was very analytical. I don't know what I can say what his specific methodology was, but he really had a way of photographing them very closely, at the time very uniquely, and he could really get a good. I mean, he has a museum, by the way, up in Jericho, Vermont, east of Burlington. Yeah, there is a museum up there you can visit. Of course, with the pandemic, who knows if it's open or not. But you know, I'd like to visit it. I've never been there. I'd like to go. It's just beautiful to see all the snowflakes. So you can't rule it out. There could be somewhere in millions of flakes, and some of them look one will look identical. But in theory, they're really pretty individual. So you know, take it for what it's worth there. But
you might
be able to find it somewhere that there's two alike, but good luck.
I love that you brought up artwork. We just had a segment just before this on photography, and right before that I interviewed Katie Rafferty, who's also a photographer. I'm a photographer, so I want to know, are there other photography series around weather that you would point out as interesting intersections between meteorology and art to check out?
I can't think of anything right off the top of my head. I remember seeing one down somewhere in this area a few years ago, and I unfortunately the exact thing, I forget it. But I know the Smithsonian has some stuff like that too. Of course, that's 400 miles away. But I think from time to time, local art museums do have things that correlate weather. There are some great painters who painted some really beautiful, like Flemish painters that painted. The Constable comes to mind, the Constable Sky, who paints stormy weather and skies in his art. If that's what you're talking about, there are certainly a lot of artists have been influenced by the weather, but I can't think of one right offhand. Sorry about that.
Well, you'll probably realize it now after the call, so do save those ideas, because I'd love to hear, be exposed to new types of artwork, and I think it's really great how there's a lot of overlap and a lot of, we think of science in one lane and art in one lane, and they're actually, they have so much overlap. I mean, especially photography as a science.
Yeah, because I think forecasting even has an art to it. I believe I'm more of a right-handed brain person. You know, a lot of people are very analytical, left brain side, and they can do the math and all that. I'm not really that great in math, but I think a pretty good knack for forecasting through just sometimes instinct and looking at past patterns and things like that. But, of course, at the end of the day, the models have really gotten good now. It's hard to beat the models. I mean, after a while, they came to consensus of the storm, and it wasn't like, oh, I'm going to think the track's going to go further west or something like that, if you know where I'm getting at. So, yeah, the models are very good. It's hard to really beat them, but they're still not perfect.
So, Hugh, that's really interesting. Different people bring different strengths to their field. And
absolutely.
Did these newest forecasting models come out after you had already stopped working professionally as a meteorologist? Were you able to get the benefit of them in your own work?
Oh, yeah. No, they've been around for a while. There's a global forecast system model. That's the large American model. And then there's a North American model. And they were around certainly when I was still working. But what I saw when I first started working were much more primitive models. When I went, especially back in college, there was a thing called the limited fine mesh, or LFM, and that was, it was like 10 times slower and a lot coarser than the models that came out later on. And I only had, instead of having 100 data points per whatever miles, I only had a few data points. So, again, the accuracy of these models weren't generally as good, although the LFM that I just mentioned really did a good job forecasting the blizzard of 78 that pummeled Boston. Did a surprisingly good job. So even back then, the models could sometimes pick up on a big event and nail it, but not that often. It's definitely improved over the years.
I'd be interested in getting maybe a full, maybe next week or one of the weeks later, specifically looking at models, how they've changed and how your work is based off of that. I think that would be a really good deep dive.
Well, that's great. No, I think that's a good thing because, the models really, they take the data, they actually take the data of the atmosphere and through several dynamical equations can really, it is pretty amazing. They can come up with a forecast that usually resembles some kind of reality. Of course, as you go further into time, it's like taking a dart and shooting it. The further you go, the more inaccurate it will get. If you're trying to shoot from here to like my door, I'm looking at my door in my bathroom. If I'm half a mile away, I'll never make it. But if I'm if I'm 5 feet away, I'll probably hit it, much more likely to hit it. So the longer out in time, the miles go a little more amok. We start looking at stuff like days in advance. And I'm looking at a mile run of the GFS now. I'm trying to see if there's going to be a warm-up in February. I'm not really seeing it. But what I know is that in La Nina years, almost every La Nina during February, we get a warm-up. At some point, we got a teeny one coming tomorrow, but I'm not counting that. But maybe a week of warm weather, almost every single La Nina. So I'm thinking the second half of the month we will see a warm up. But I'll be honest, I'm not seeing on this GFS run yet.
Hugh, thank you. It's always so interesting to hear from you about the weather. I'm looking forward next time you can start. Dredging up anecdotes from your annals to hearing about your fan base. And we're running out of time now, so we're going to have to cut this short, but thanks again.
Let me just say real quickly, watch out for Friday. Nasty storm, think probably close to 6 inches. If it's more sleet, it's a little less than 6 inches. If it's all snow, we'll get more than 6 inches. And there could be some ice, and I'm really concerned there could be some bad ice. Hopefully, that stays south of the capital region, but the further south you are, the risk of of getting ice enough to cause power outages increases. Just keep that in mind.
I just want to quickly follow up on that. Is it coming from the west? Like, if somebody has to drive to Oneonta, is that an issue?
Yeah, well, definitely be an issue. It's coming from the southwest. It's actually a front that's slowly pressing south. A lot of cold air behind it, a southwest flow aloft, and that's going to stall the front and tap moisture, and there's going to be a series of storms moving along it. So it may not precipitate the entire time, but it's going to come down pretty hard at times. And anywhere you go on Friday, it's going to be bad news. Around here, you have to go way south to get out of it.
Well, thank you so much, Hugh. Yeah. I appreciate your forecasting and all of your insight.
Alrighty, you got it. Stay safe.
You too. Thank you so much.
All right, have a great evening. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org. Here is a 2020 reissue from Esquivel, the Mexican composer. The song is called Snowfall, and it's from the album The Fabulous World of Esquivel.
You like to
do a show on WGXC?
Would you like to do a show on WGXC?
Interesting, boring, really, really boring.
It'd be about
chocolate pigs.
She's obsessed with pigs.
Chocolate pigs?
All
the way down.
I turned it down. Only dogs can hear.
I turned it down.
Do it.
Did you hear that?
No.
Round and around and around. Round and around and around. Round and around and around and around and around.
Oh, stop the world and let me on. Will tumble to the ground. One I love has let me down. I lost the wonder of his kiss. How could he leave me here like this? Oh, stop the world and let me on. Inside, I know his love for me has died. I lost the wonder of his kiss. How could he leave me here like this? Oh, stop the world and let me on.
The Daily Yonder and Public News Service, this is the news from rural America. Technology can frustrate anyone, much less older adults, but a pilot program in 5 rural Oklahoma communities could serve as a model to help reduce the digital divide.
We had the idea that we would go into rural places that were struggling with connectivity and partner with